Berylum Sports.
Hello again and welcome to Berylum Sport Podcasting. And Sunday saw an emotional end to Saracens' dynasty-like run in the Gallagher Premiership. We've discussed it all campaign. They went out to a gallant draw the final game of the season against Bath. They will bounce back. We're now, though, joined by the voice of Saracens, our man, John Hawkins. John, how are you? Keeping well?
Very well, thanks, Tony. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, look, John, it's been a seriously weird year for us all, I think, this particular one. But in a way, it has been an annus horribilis for Saracens. It's been much documented. I don't think there's going to be anything gained from analysing anything in too depth there now. But overall, John, what I'm fascinated to gain from you is this. What is the mood amongst the Saracens fans? Obviously, long ago, relegation was an inevitability. What's the sense of anticipation, I suppose, for the bounce back process?
I think it's been a strange year, obviously. To start with, there was a sort of degree of defiance, mm-hmm. you know, true and anger, I suppose, that maybe Saracens being made scapegoats. There's still a little bit of that, and you wonder, and you certainly hope that every other club in the future is treated as harshly as Saracens have been. But I think overall, very proud of the way they've reacted on the pitch and the coaches. You know, they have had still a strong year, despite the fact the games were meaningless. They still turned up and put in strong performances. And of course, delighted and very proud that so many of the top players have stayed with the club. So overall, I think it's been a difficult year, but still a lot to be positive about.
Yeah, I would totally agree there. And I think you've made a really valid and vital point there. There are such a core of world-class players that will be still donning the famous black of Saracens very, very soon indeed. And it would have been easy for so many, the likes of Atoje, Goode and a whole heap of others, to kind of cut their losses and move on and take the next big payday. The fact that they haven't, they've shown that loyalty, John, for me reflects the kind of Wolfpack mentality and the real kind of identity that the players seem to have for the Saracens jersey. It seems to be much, much bigger almost than a rugby club these days.
Yeah, and I think, every time you hear one of them interviewed, it's all about the relationships they have with their fellow players and the coaches and how much they love the club and that being more important than anything else. And that, you know, clearly must be true or they just wouldn't have stayed. So it's a culture that's been built up over many years, it's been, you know, hugely successful, and the players are now paying back, you know, everything that they've given and received from the club. They're now paying back, which is great.
Absolutely, and we're going to be excited to see this bounce back process continue. Tell you what, though, Johnny, as you rightly say, we'll drill into the final kind of emotional game at the weekend against Bath. But just stepping back briefly in time, one of the highlights of this campaign, and there was a pivot process where the original focus was going to be on league survival when the points deduction looked like it could be potentially clawed back. Then when that was overturned and it became a plus 100 points total to overcome and therefore, quite frankly, nigh on literally impossible, the pivot focus became Europe, didn't it? And another great European campaign bidding for back-to-back titles. I think it would have been, if they had achieved that awesome goal, 4 European crowns in 5 seasons. Again, those facts speak volumes. But unfortunately, Racing 92, a great team, in front of 1,000 of their home faithful, just overcame Saracens in the semi, didn't they? But another gallant effort in that semi-final run.
It was a great game actually, Racing are a great team, and they're on their own journey to become, you know, one of the greats of Europe. You know, they've been in finals and semi-finals several times over the last few years, and you know, you think that this year may be their year, albeit tough against Exeter. But still, Saracens, you know, they pulled out all the stops, and even though it was in Paris and they're playing a great team, they basically dominate for the first sort of 20, 30 minutes of the second half, pull ahead, only to be undone by what was, you know, a moment of brilliance from Finn Russell, Faka Tower, to snatch the game for Racing. Overall, you have to say, I think Racing deserved it. Mm-hmm. I think they did play surprising rugby, but it was still a great, nearly win for Saracens. It was still a great performance.
Absolutely. Again, tough opponents. We'll drill into that in just a second. Again, it's almost changed because it's ifs and buts and those sweet, sweet nuts syndrome. But obviously, you mentioned already, there will be a new name on the trophy this year. Saracens, the people who beat Saracens Racing 92 against Exeter. Again, there would have been something just a little bit poetic, I feel. Poetic justice, perhaps, if it had been an all-English Saracens Men in Black versus Exeter final, who have been, of course, very vehement and vociferous in their condemnation of the Saracens situation, which prompted the relegation. If some buts and sweet nuts, but my goodness me, that would have been a juicy encounter, wouldn't it?
That certainly would have been a grudge match, that's for sure. I mean, in fairness, it's not the players, it's not the manager, it is the chairman that's making the noise. The players and the coach overall, you have to have a lot of respect for, I think. But it would have been a hell of a grudge match, yeah. But not to be. Exeter, I think, given the match is now, as I understand it, in Bristol, as the Marseille where it was supposed to be, I would say are probably slight favourites now. Whereas if it had been in France, I think Racing would have been the favourites. So it'll be interesting to see how it pans out.
Absolutely. But I'll tell you what, I'm inclined to agree with you there, John. But you mentioned Faka Tower. Just a moment of brilliance, wasn't it? We kind of highlighted him as a danger man as we previewed this semi-final. And he'd made more clean breaks than anybody else in the tournament. Miles clear of his nearest challenger in that category. Just a moment of brilliance. Very hard to legislate for. And then, again, the list of quality players. Finn Russell on fire throughout the tournament. Fizzed it out to another international winger to finish the job. It's just almost impossible to keep Racing quiet from the full 80, isn't it?
It is, but you do have to wonder what would have happened if they'd have had a fuller squad and the ability to pull on the sort of strength of bench that they would have done in the past. If Farrell had been playing, if Brad Barrett had not had to go off, I think that did make a big difference. It's all what might have been, but you feel they did have a tough gig without all the cards that they would normally have available.
It was a mighty and indeed a Herculean effort against great opponents, as you said. I'm delighted you mentioned there the captain, fantastic Brad Barrett, sadly had to go off before the end of the fray. But what a stalwart he's been. And we'll move on now to the Bath fixture, a 17-0 draw last weekend in the final game, at least for the now of Saracens' glorious tenure in the Premiership. But another major, major player in this decade of dynasty for Saracens has been Wigglesworth. Bows out after his 250th game at the weekend. It's hard to devote and condense this, John, because one could spend so long on both of those two great Saracen stars, but just briefly, your thoughts and your memories of Captain Fantastic Barrett and alongside Mr. Consistency Wigglesworth.
Where do you start, really? I think Brad Barrett has to be the consummate sort of leader. He literally runs through brick walls for the club. So many bad injuries he's picked up and fought on, and next week he'd be there, plated back up, stitched up, and on the pitch again. I always remember him coming off the pitch for England, and it was literally like lumps hanging off him, blooded. And that's for me is an enduring image of and sums him up. Absolute, so brave, but also just a calm leader, the sort of person that you can tell the other players respect enormously and just want to perform for. Wiggy, incredible character, the most successful player in the Premiership's history.
Absolutely.
250 games for Saracens. You know, the control he was able to bring, particularly big games. I think when things got a bit harum scarum, you know, he was not quite as good. But between him and Farrell, they could absolutely control a game and put a stranglehold on teams in a way that nobody else, I think,
is the master of the art of box kicking, isn't it? It's such an important tool to the armour of a scrum half. Every scrum half kind of endeavours to do it, recognise it as almost a core element of their game. But very few have done it such consistent excellence as Wiggy.
I think it's excellence over the years, isn't it? You know, everybody, other players have their sort of purple patches, but yeah, he's been there year in, year out. And it's just the way when he... you know, the way he can control and calm a game and just you know, allow the pack to you know, they know where the ball's going to be, and they can rely on it. It just brings everybody that that ability to perform, knowing that your halfbacks are going to be totally reliable, and that's what he's done over such a long time.
Just absolute legends, not just for Saracens, but for English rugby. My final point on coming back to Barrett, John, you did right. You're absolutely correct to highlight his bravery. But you know what? For me, I sometimes think he gets underrated as a bona fide world-class centre. Not necessarily a centre who's going to tear you up, but who does all the things that you want your centre to do well. I would say almost like an upgraded Will Carling in a way. And as I say, I respect his defensive prowess, and you cannot but raise a glass to that bravery, which kind of is his core trademark. But again, in his legacy terms, I want him to be remembered as a man who I think maybe could have earned a few more England caps, because he was international class.
Absolutely. No, I think, I mean, his defence is, again, over the years, he must be the best defensive centre in Europe, probably. His ability to kind of crash ball, to punch holes and make yards. And then the other thing he did have, it wasn't, so, you know, it wasn't the sort of silky sidestep, but what he did have had incredibly soft, silky hands.
Yep.
And he could do very quick passes that put other players through. So he did absolutely, or still does, have skills that made him a superb centre. And not only a leader, but a genuinely world-class player in his own right.
Absolutely. He will be missed, but he has left an indelible mark, as indeed is Wigglesworth as well. John, we've mentioned that this has been a challenging season. It's churlish of us now to kind of conjecture about what might have been. But that 105 points deduction, if that had not come into play in some kind of parallel universe where everything, quote unquote, then Saracens would have finished up on 67 points this campaign, level on Bath, who they drew gallantly at the weekend, in a playoff position and still contending for a championship. You know, look at their wins in a season where it would have been also easy for them to kind of wave the white flag. Only the top four had more wins. On balance, on paper, it's an amazing campaign, I think, in context.
And so many of those games, particularly since the second points deduction, have been with, you know, teams of young players who have all performed superbly well, got fantastic experience, and will be not only well placed to do well in the championship, but actually be stars of the future. There's no question.
Absolutely.
So, you know, had they put out their strongest team for all of those matches, I'm sure they would be right up Exeter's, you know, right on Exeter's coattails, and challenging, obviously.
As I say, for me, it would have been all too easy for many a lesser club, when they were given that deduction, to sort of say, well, this is a write-off, this doesn't really matter anymore, let's just give this season up, and almost do that as a mini protest, if you would. Not a bit of it, John, was there? Not a single bit. It was always, whatever 15 were on the park, they were there understanding the ethos of the culture that's been embedded throughout this. I still maintain the dynasty is not detracted, in my opinion. So again, the character of the club has really shone through this challenging campaign.
Yeah, it has, and I think, you know, that goes right the way through the club. It is, it's obviously the coaches who are, I think they've all stayed, which is fantastic. I think they're all, you know, energised by the challenge of rebuilding and you know, having a second sort of dynasty, which is great. And the senior players, they obviously all set that same tone, and the youngsters are really thriving and growing every game. So it's been a strange, but actually a year with an awful lot of positives, as we said earlier.
Absolutely. I think they seriously outweigh the any negatives. And again, the negatives are what they are and cannot be analysed any further, quite frankly. You mentioned there's some of the youngsters, and there's so many powerful ones to name. But for so many years, this has been the kind of signature of the Saracens dynasty. But they don't necessarily spend the big bucks. I mean, I know they have Kark, and they've selected very wisely from their international potentiality. But it is a core homegrown team. And I think only really could be matched by Exeter. And if you think about the overall kind of trend of success in the Premiership over the last decade, quite frankly, I think the rest of the league need to take a little look into the playbook from Saracens and Exeter to boot about the best ways to really develop local and talent and make them part of that wider culture. But Saracens have definitely shone a light on that this season and beyond.
I think what's incredible, was listening to the commentary whilst watching the Saracens match last night, and they were cutting across to the other games that were important. And the number of Saracens players that are on loan or have left the club as a result of what's happened, that were really creating the headlines and making things happen in those games. It just goes to show the conveyor belt of talent that's been for the benefit of English and Scottish Welsh rugby entirely. It's been a hugely successful program of developing, blooding young players early, not being afraid to do that, and giving them an environment and a platform to succeed and really be able to develop very quickly.
And Sunday's game, obviously quite an emotional one, the last one at least for a season in the Gallagher Premiership for Saracens. In microcosm, kind of reflects everything that we've been talking about, I feel, because they went behind to Bath, who, let's not forget, finished the season in fourth. And that wasn't guaranteed. They had an awful lot to gun for at the weekend. Saracens, as we've long discussed, were long relegated. So they showed that character to bounce back in front of our home faithful. It was, and of course, then we talk about that new fold talent, that next generation, and it was Vunipola of the I think Manu variety, more of a back and I think it's fly half by trade compared to his two famed brothers coming to the fold. But again, microcosmically reflecting the two key talismans of the Saracens, that indelible spirit and that cultivation of the next generation of talent. Great efforts, I thought, against a very, very, very fine Bath outfit.
It was a very strong Bath side. But interesting, Ben Spencer was their best player.
Yes, and indeed.
It wasn't long before, a few months ago, he was Wiggy's understudy. And he's really flying since he's been given the chance to be the main man there. But it was a good performance. I mean, I don't think we should underestimate the impact of the weather first half when Saracens were struggling. And indeed, Bristol in the second half had to play into that. It was a very nervy, emotional performance. Mm-hmm. A lot of spill. But they got to grips with it. Itoje got man of the match quite rightly, but as much, I would say, for his leadership and it's what he actually did. I mean, he was always, he was always superb. But the way
real quickly to cut your flow short,
along.
Because you bring up Itoje in the same breath as a leader, and we've long discussed that. it's been mooted. I'd love your take on this. It's been mooted. Just paper talk, I think, just quietly at the moment. Could Itoje be a Lions captain for you? Or would that be putting too much pressure on that giant man's shoulders?
I've certainly heard that. And I think it's probably between him and Farrell. Mm. And I think, you know, arguably he's, because he's not the England captain, that's the reason why he's perhaps more likely to get it than Farrell is.
Interesting. Interesting. He's certainly been a man, though, hasn't he, for many
years? He's got what it takes, no question. You know, he obviously captained England to a youth World Cup, whatever it was, under 19 World Cup success as a very young man. He, if you recall, he was used to captain the reserve side for a successful couple of seasons. So he's in his blood. And I think if Farrell wasn't there, he might be stepping into the role at Saracens. Although I think Jamie George has really, you know, shown a sort of a potential to do that as well.
Lots of great leadership qualities. And again, that is one of the keys of Saracens. But you were mentioning them, Itoje, man of the match performance, but maybe not necessarily just for the things that he did, but the way that he was able to apply those potential Lions captaincy influence on the team. But John, again, to bounce back from a deficit against a very, very good Bath team, who are still theoretically champions, is outstanding. What were the rest of your takeaways from that kind of fight back in the second half?
I think it's just, you know, it was sheer determination. They weren't going to come to Bath, and they weren't going to allow, you know, Wigglesworth to go out in his last match losing. And you know, that they just overpowered mentally, I think, in the second half. And once they got a slight upside, they just, you know, clicked into gear. They were dominant in the scrum. And they started making a lot of grounds, you know, in the forwards. And it just became almost an inevitability that they would sort of haul them back in.
John, listen, I've always appreciated your time, your company, and you are the voice of Saracens. We all look forward to enjoying your company for that bounce back season. Just want to ask you one question on that before we kind of build to it in the next few weeks and months. It is what it is, but is there a concern just from a neutral or slightly objective perspective that if Saracens do what we suspect they will and bounce back in emphatic style, well, that may not do actually a good reflection on the kind of next level of rugby as is at the moment. And that this may indeed have been a really cutting off the nose to spite the face situation of the bigger picture of English rugby at this moment in time. Just thoughts briefly on that.
Well, I think it's actually a worry the way that next with COVID, what's going to happen now? There is a concern that the championship season might not start when it's supposed to. And if it doesn't start and doesn't finish, then Saracens can't be promoted. So, you know, I am actually quite worried that it's completely outside of rugby and, you know, there are, at the end of the day, it's only a sport. But I am seriously worried that something could prevent them from being able to finish the league and get promoted again. And I would worry that the way that the chairman of the Premiership clubs have reacted, that they wouldn't, you know, take advantage of that and even face it in some way, to be honest with you. I think they'll play sides week in, week out with only one or two of the superstars. They'll only play enough to keep their hand in, and they'll hold them back for the Lions and for England, and to give them a rest. I mean, guys like Jamie George and Farrell, they've just played so much rugby as young men.
It's crazy. Have a season, it's absolutely crazy.
Of rest is going to be hugely beneficial to them and to England. So I think they'll do that most of the matches. So I don't think they're going to sort of massacre the teams week in, week out. I think A, more respectful, and B, you know, the teams they play will be a little bit more matched in the way they approach it.
John, as always, so I value your time and your insights. Let's rather hope, fingers crossed, that there is at least some normal bell curve and some quote-unquote new normal rugby ahead of us in the near future. But for now, thank you for all your insights, your awesome analysis for the Saris in this very strange, surreal season, and look forward to more positive news as we build forwards and drill into next campaign. Thanks for your time just now.